welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Turn the Page. I'm your host today, Jen, and I'm joined again by an author who is visiting us a second time, who is here with another book. I loved his book from last year, and this one is such a worthy successor. It is so phenomenal. So let's hop into it. Hello, welcome back. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your book, please?
Sure. My name is Tim McGregor, and I'm the author of Ein Hallow, which comes out next week, February 22nd, from Rawdog Screaming Press. It's a story about a woman, a wife and mom living on an island in the Orkneys in 1797. A stranger comes to shore, rents the abandoned cottage, and is very mysterious. Our protagonist gets hired out to bring the man his meals, and he turns out to be Victor Frankenstein. And she develops a relationship with him. That's basically the premise of the book.
The premise just had me off the bat. I remember seeing a tweet from Raw Dog Screaming Press about announcing the book, and I think I hopped on it like I couldn't keep my chill. You know, sometimes I like to wait 2-3 minutes so I don't look quite as desperate, you know, before I reply, but I just did not this time. And as I hinted at, your book from, I guess, last year or maybe late the year before that, time is still a little wibbly wobbly to me, but Wasp in the Ice Cream was one of my very, very favorites from that year.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And I love some of the overlaps and the ways in which this one's different. So could you tell us about, maybe the pivot between those projects and, yeah, introduce our listeners to Ein Hallow, please.
Sure. Wasp in the Ice Cream was actually written a couple of years before, and it had gone through a strange publishing history. It had been picked up by one publisher, and then that publisher collapsed about 3 weeks before the book was supposed to come out. So there actually is a fair couple of years between them. But my interests kind of flip all over the place. Whatever catches my fancy. With Ein Hallow, it started out as a short story. And I knew I wanted to write about the Bride of Frankenstein. And I went back to the original book because even though I'd read it a number of times, I couldn't remember the specifics about how she's created. I remember that Victor Frankenstein creates the mates to fulfill the promise of it for his creature, but then in the last minute he destroys her and dumps her body in the sea. But when I went back to the original text, there isn't anything about where she came from. Like, Victor goes to this island, he says there's only six people on the island, and then he just gets to work. There's no mention of rotting graves or bringing body parts with him to create a female monster. He just gets to work. So I left this strange little window for me to sort of explore. Without really altering the original Frankenstein text, because my story begins and ends, and then the story of Frankenstein kind of carries on, the two of them chasing each other through the Arctic. It was just this really interesting wide open space where I could create something about an iconic character. And this one poor peasant woman who's just doing her best to try to survive in a very bleak location with a very nasty spouse.
I'd be curious to know more about your relationship with the novel Frankenstein, because I encountered it both in high school and then in college and then in grad school too, and I found myself, like, every time I've read it, I sort of notice new things and have a slightly different perspective on it. So I'm wondering, how much time did you spend revisiting it, and did you find yourself noticing new things when you were reading it, you know, towards writing, as opposed to just reading for reading's sake?
Right. That's a great question. Like you, I read it first in high school. I was disappointed with it back then because I was expecting, like, the movie, right? Mm-hmm. Was not expecting this very eloquent creature to talk. And then read it a couple more times in university. Always found something new about it. This time when I went back, I think I was more struck by kind of Victor Frankenstein's arrogance, which I kind of allowed due to his class in life, his station in life. You know, like the one part that really got me was in the novel, the creature murders his little brother. And Victor Frankenstein knows the truth, but he lets the governess take the fall for it, and she dies, and he's barely even remorseful about it, which kind of, to me, informs a lot of who this guy really is. You know, human, but he has that aristocratic edge to him that really makes him think he and his class are superior to everyone around them. Like they can just use people and throw them away. And for this project specifically, I bought this beautiful edition. It was the annotated Frankenstein, annotated by Leslie Klinger, I think. It's a beautiful hardcover, tons of beautiful illustrations, but that was really informative just for sort of details and the timing of it, you know. So yeah, every time I go back, I mean, hell, every time I watch one of those goofy old black and white movies, I get something new out of it, or at least some enjoyment, you know. It's such a classic tale. And I've heard Frankenstein described as the first myth of the modern era, which I totally agree with, right? Because you know, you hear the word Frankenstein bandied about, and it can mean so many things, but we all know it basically means creating something that comes around and bites you in the ass.
Yes. Oh yeah. My gosh. Yes. Yeah, early horror, early sci-fi, like look what, you know, man has wrought, the consequences of our own development. Yeah, you know, one of the things I think that makes it so great to revisit is the sort of holes in the narrative, like the one that you are sort of like filling in with this book. There's so much left unsaid, even though Victor spends so much time talking through his inner state. You know, there's a lot he leaves out. So could you talk about what it was like to sort of revisit the narrative specifically through the perspective of Agnes? Could you tell us a little bit about shaping her and her perspective on the events of the island? And, you know, what it was like to write a relationship between a new character that you just invented and like a extraordinarily famous character from literature, if that makes sense.
It was a lot of fun. Like I said, when I first had the idea, I knew I wanted it to be about the bride. So it was like, who was she? And looking at the setting, she clearly would have been barely like a peasant woman of that time. She is different. I kind of made her a bit of an outsider because she's a little taller than everybody else, and everybody kind of like it's causing a bit of a problem for her. And she's new to, she wasn't born on the island, so she's automatically considered a bit of an outsider there, which helped in trying to make this one character relate to this stranger, Victor Frankenstein, who's also a bit of a cast off, but or in self exile, as it were, and trying to make the two of them like how would the two of them actually relate? He's aristocratic, used to a certain lifestyle. She's this woman who like constantly has her hands dirty, just keeping the family alive, right? But it was also a good premise for like a sort of a romance, you know. That's sort of like there's not really a meet cute, but you know, you put two characters together who are opposites, and a lot of times they'll attract. So yeah, it was a lot of fun to write, really. Like, when I was writing, I'd have these moments of doubt, thinking like, "Who am I to like monkey around with this book with Frankenstein?" I'm just, you know. But in the end, I think it actually all turned out okay. So I was pretty happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, oh my gosh. It is such a gorgeous new perspective on the novel. And I really like appreciated Agnes as a just a perspective character, both on her island setting and her, you know, community that she finds herself in, and on this new outsider in the form of Victor Frankenstein. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the language of the book, you know, because something that I thought I noticed that I really loved is that like the contrast between Agnes's voice and Victor's voice. Like Victor kind of talks like more in the language of Mary Shelley. You know, he said he's very romantic and sort of like emotionally charged, like romantic in the literary sense, and I guess in the romantic sense.
Sure.
And Agnes has a very grounded, sort of pragmatic, more down to earth sort of view. And there are lots of lovely instances, I think, of him sort of getting up in his aristocratic, romantic worldview and her kind of like puncturing that balloon a little bit. So can you talk about how you wrote their contrasting voices?
Sure. It was a lot of fun to write. Like I said, you know, opposites can be a lot of fun to play with. And with Victor, I had, you know, there's the original text, but also Mary Shelley's life, her husband Shelley, who was literally the crazy poet who was running naked in the fields shouting beauty, you know? So
Yeah.
that was, I kind of pictured that, and especially he was also fun to write because he would have been, like you said, that aristocrat who would sort of get carried away with himself and his own language and lofty ideas. And you know, Agnes is someone who's, she doesn't have time for that. She doesn't have time for like lofty ideals of poetry and beauty and science because she's got to get dinner on the table or, you know, stop a child from like running off the cliff. So her perspective is very down to earth and a little, because of her treatment in life, a little more grounded and grittier than the lofty Victor Frankenstein who looks to, you know, I always picture Victor Frankenstein as being one of those guys who's into fainting. You remember fainting used to be a big thing back then?
Yes, yeah.
That showed how delicate you were. I kind of pictured him like that. And the contrast, like playing with that, was a lot of fun in the two characters. Because there's great moments in the book where that I love, where she literally pounds the table to get him to
Yeah.
snap out of his, you know, his fainting spell.
Yeah, it's really it made me realize some interesting things about the original novel too, in that like he is so navel-gazy, like in that book, that you don't really know how he actually appears to outsiders or to people who aren't him. Like he has these people in his life that he assumes love him, like Elizabeth and his, you know, family and all that. But like to actually get a perspective on how he's perceived both by Agnes and like the villagers on this island is such an interesting perspective on like how this character must seem outside of his own worldview, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I always like it's kind of like, you know, like sort of in a lot of movies there'll be that character who's the sort of the lone wolf, the guy who doesn't play by the rules. It's great for a movie, but imagine that guy in real life. He would be insufferable, you know.
Yeah.
So kind of picturing Frankenstein as that among a group of people who are a bit cliquey but also not of that world, was just a lot of fun to play with.
I'd love if you could talk a little bit about like populating the island and filling out the cast of characters. There's Katie and her family, and she has a really lovely dynamic with Agnes as like kind of the only person who doesn't make her feel like a total outsider. So could you talk about, yeah, like the characters and like what sort of emotional dynamics you were trying to go for with them and how that like pushes Agnes sort of like into the events of this novel.
Right. The other characters, it was kind of fun because you're creating basically like a little town, all with, you know, unusual, not unusual, but sort of maybe eccentric characters. But you'd have some sort of stock characters, like Katie is the best friend who's kind of Agnes's rock. When everything goes, she knows that Katie will always be there for her. And Katie has a sense of humor, which ends up sort of making fun of everybody, kind of cutting out the seriousness of it all. And by contrast, her husband is actually a good man, which in contrast to Agnes's own husband, who is a bit of a brute. And then the other characters, like, you'd have the one person who's very pious, kind of looking down on everybody, and then maybe the gossip or the one woman who was born on the island and kind of looks down on everybody because she's the only true islander born here. You know, those kind of like sort of small community tropes are always fun to play with, you know. And I don't know if mine went a bit over the top, but I don't know. It was just a lot of fun to create the little tropes and have them bounce off each other, but then play with it a bit so that the uppity woman actually has a bit of a heart at the end when it's too late, or even her brutal husband has a few nice turns. So he's, you know, he's not all bad. He can do these nice things, and Agnes is very frustrated, thinking, why can't he? Why does he have to be so awful, and why not be nicer? Like, she knows he can be, and she's frustrated that she chooses to just be a brute to her and the kids, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it made with the remote setting and everything being so far away from really any other communities, it made me think about like that the emotions would run really high, you know, because like we're also talking about a world in which like people aren't as mobile, especially at this like socioeconomic level. So the people that you live around, you are stuck with. So you need to sort of like put up with like relationship dynamics that you might not really otherwise really want to be a part of your life, you know, and the just the stakes that that creates, you know, because it's really, really like a lot of like social horror, even in a weird, like low key way, in addition to sort of like the supernatural horror that comes in via the Frankenstein plots.
Yeah, for sure. And exactly like you said, like everyone on that island would they wouldn't have the option of not liking somebody, because you would have to depend on each other in such a remote place, which makes the relationships kind of interesting to delve into, because somebody might be really mad, but they still gotta be polite to a certain extent, because next week you're gonna need to borrow that guy's horse to till your field or something, you know, or get off the island, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think another interesting theme that this book kind of plays with is like how pain kind of works through people, you know, and how it can change the way that you interact with other people. So I think you see a lot of really interesting different emotional arcs. Even just between like Agnes and Victor, like she has a is experiencing a lot of like emotional pain just from her sort of like solitude in the community and like her very, very troubled, sometimes like violent marriage. And Victor sort of like operating under the weight of like, you know, the curse or the obligation as he refers to in it. So yeah, could you also talk? I mean, like this is, I guess, all kind of circling back to like another question about like horror and trauma, you know, but like, you know, like what pain does to people and sort of how that kind of works here too.
Sure. Like, again, just contrasting the two, you know, Agnes is somebody who had to deal with a lot of pain in her life, both physical, because she grows to such tall stature, and then the her being ostracized or made fun of and stuff like that, as well as, you know, just the physical pain of, like, she's there would be a lot of hard labor just living that life. Whereas Frankenstein, he doesn't really go through a lot of bad stuff until he creates the monster. He's the elite. He's the 1% who's been sort of coddled and protected most of his life, and has time to think about things like science and nature and poetry. Whereas Agnes does not. Agnes simply has to get on with the day. So, yeah, I get again. It just came back to contrasting the two and just making it playful when it needed to be playful, and then horrific when everything goes really bad. Just their opposite styles of thinking and the way that they come at the world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it is really interesting to me that, you know, like Victor, who feels so persecuted in his own novel and in this one, you know, like, and you know, he really is like truly responsible for all of his own suffering, you know. Whereas Agnes, who was like truly persecuted by her community and by her husband and like the world to some extent, like doesn't have time for that feeling of persecution, you know, because there's she has so many obligations. I really love her as a heroine and as a POV character. And I do appreciate the fact that she is tall and, you know, big, because I feel like so often when you read stuff from this time period and stuff set in this time period, it's like so in love with the idea of like the feisty petite heroine, you know, who's small but mighty, and you know, like so it's just really nice to see that formula get changed too.
Thanks. You know, if I first came up with it, because I had this weird idea, like, if she was going to go through this process of dying and being resurrected and having it work, she would have to be somebody who's physically strong and have a almost a high pain tolerance. So that was kind of why I came up with that at first. But then it just became so interesting to explore the world through somebody who is literally looking down on everybody, but in reality, it's the reverse, because everyone's mocking her for her height, and she's not even that tall. She's like a little over 6 feet, but at a time when everyone was maybe 5 foot, she would look like a giant. And, you know, people in the UK like to play with exaggeration, you know, in terms of, like, or I guess we all do, but any little difference is enough to make somebody a target. You know, and it was, I don't know, it just ended up informing the character a lot, having this height and strength, like the fact that she, if she wanted to, she could literally beat the shit out of her husband, but but she cannot. She knows she cannot. That was like fascinating, you know, so fun to explore.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating like glimpse into this the gender and the social dynamics of this time period too, and how that operates on the ground. And you know, like it really plays, I think, interestingly. Like I love stuff that writes about historical women that like, yes, acknowledges like the boundaries and the limitations placed on them by society, but also like how those boundaries create opportunities for boundary transgression and for like challenging those norms and stuff like that. I think it's really cool.
For sure. You know, I've always been a little fascinated with Mary Shelley's life. And I didn't really know much about her mother, except for the fact that she wrote The Vindication of the Rights of Women, which was like, I think, the first feminist piece of literature. But I read a dual biography of both Mary Shelley and Mary Wollstonecraft. It's called Romantic Outlaws. I'm blanking on the author's name, but it's a fantastic read because they are both, her mother was like just a wild child. In terms of like living her life, like when the French Revolution breaks out, she goes straight to Paris, with, like in the middle of them guillotining people and stuff. And she strolls through the empty hall of Versailles, which has been emptied after they took down the king. So the, you know, it was a bit, I was trying to pay a bit of homage to both Mary and her mother. Mary Wollstonecraft and what they were up against in crafting my protagonist and the situation she's in. So that was kind of a, I don't know, it just felt like not a debt, but I wanted to do that. I wanted to sort of honor where the book came from in the first place, both mine, Mary's, and her mother's. Like almost like a lineage, maybe. Even though that sounds incredibly arrogant, like that, but you know.
No, I think it's like it's in dialogue with that tradition and with that text in particular in such interesting ways. And it was just really like a delight to read. And the slow burn, like dread is just so effective. And you know, it does that thing that I love when I'm reading a slow burn that was like, I'll put it down when it gets less stressful, you know, and then you just keep reading. So thank you so much for writing this and for sharing it with us. It's been really great to talk to you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for reading and the kind words. And again, it's been a great talk to you. I really enjoyed our last conversation, and I've been looking forward to this one too.
Great, thank you. And you know, you are always welcome back. You know, I'll continue to, you know, knock on your
Okay.
email more.
All right. I'll next time I have something coming on, I'll send you a message.
Okay, listeners, now it's your turn. You're going to check out Ein Hollow. It is out by the time that you hear this, it will be out in the world. Yeah, please go check it out. Go to your favorite library or independent bookstore. You're not gonna regret it at all. All right, thanks so much for joining us. It is now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.